This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Special Edition, Black Widow at the movies!
Sisters, sisters, there were never such devoted sisters. Never had to have a chaperone, no sir. I'm here to keep my eye on her. Caring, sharing, every little thing that we are wearing. When a certain gentleman from Rome, she wore the dress, and I...
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Special Edition Black Widow. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and we are so excited to be talking about a film that's in theaters, at least most of us saw in theaters, that we assembled a roundtable of iFanboys to talk about it. I'm joined by Josh Flanagan.
Hey there.
Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And Mike Romo.
Hello, guys. It's been a while.
So we are back, our first... theatrical special edition in well over a year. I almost don't even know how to do this show anymore. But we'll be talking about Black Widow, and there'll be spoilers. So if you haven't seen it, of course, you shouldn't be wary of that. But this is a film that was delayed over a year, as everything was. It was supposed to have come out. We got their whole Marvel continuity screwed up with in relation to Falcon and the Winter Soldier. We'll talk about that later.
Kind of. Yeah. I mean...
It was supposed to come out first. Doesn't really matter.
Right,
matter.
Right.
If they hadn't said anything,
wouldn't
have noticed.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. So,
this is obviously this stars Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow, and we'll get to some other people in a second.
Executive producer Scarlett Johansson,
and written by Jack Schaefer and Ned Benson and Eric Pearson, some combination thereof. Directed by an Australian director, Kate Shortland, and. What's funny about this situation, I want to talk about the experience in a second, because Paul, you saw it on demand, right?
I watched part of it on an iPad.
Wow.
Jesus.
That's not
you got 30 bucks worth.
Jeez, but listen, you guys, I'm a Premier Access Plus member. I've actually watched this movie twice.
Oh, wow.
So, and I could watch it again after
must
this.
Must not be that bad.
And Josh...
I'll watch it again as many times as I want.
Josh, you saw it in theaters.
Really. I did. I saw it in the theater last night.
And then Mike and I saw... We were lucky enough to go to one of the three premieres a few weeks ago. So Mike and I might be rusty on the details.
No, it's good.
And
a little distance is really good for these shows, I'm telling you.
And... You know, I don't know about everybody else's experience, but it was the first time I had been to a theater on the lockdown, but rented out by myself theater. I know Josh did that at least, but this is the first time being in a full, packed because it was the premiere, totally packed house. It was a little strange, but very nice. The communal laugh, the communal cheer, the communal clap. There's nothing like it. And
communal diseases.
I'm obviously the communal diseases.
Good old communal clap.
The communicable laugh.
And when I
was in the Navy, we had the community clap.
Oh God, this is going to be a 2-hour show. So a thought occurred to me about 5 minutes into this movie. And that was that I had no idea what I was in for because I hadn't seen a trailer for it.
Yeah. You hadn't seen any of the 70 trailers that they,
I didn't. I tried to avoid them in general, but you know, movies weren't coming out, so I wasn't really paying attention to trailers. And also, you know, we went to the premiere. There was art everywhere, but it was so disorienting to be among so many people. I wasn't really looking around at the posters, so I didn't know the characters. We'll talk about one of the villains that I have no idea was in the movie at all. So I was,
the one I'm thinking of. I'm not sure that it was
totally blind to the. And I thought that was cool. I mean, I don't know, Mike, if you were
no, aware I of mean, what was coming I had for no you. Idea. I looked at the. I mean, we even took pictures in front of the characters in the little step and repeat, and I had no idea what I was looking at. And there were people in cosplay, and it was so disorienting. I mean, just to set the stage, we're in Hollywood Boulevard. It's a red carpet. There's people for some reason across the street screaming at us, cheering, you know, because they think something's happening. There's no stars there. Clark Gregg.
You're outside.
There.
Good for yeah, you. We
you made it. But yeah, and then Connor and I, and of course we were very lucky to get seats, but we were in the front row of the right aisle. So I have new muscles in my neck that I didn't have before.
Yeah, I'm curious to watch this again straight on to find out if the director was actually good at shooting action or if it was just the angle I was at. But it was tough.
Was cool.
But yeah, but so it was cool being in the theater. It was cool going in totally blind. This is of course as we gave you the spoiler warning, but whatever, who cares? Black Widow died in the fight against Thanos. This is a flashback. This is a, you know, takes place in the past, takes place right after Captain America Civil War.
Takes place in 2016, which is really a cool period. You know, that Civil War, it was just kind of a nice to be back there in a weird way, yeah. In a more innocent time.
Between Civil War and Infinity War takes place as... Yeah.
Like right after Civil War.
Right, Black Widow's on the run from the government because they're chasing all the rogue Avengers who went up against the, I was going to say Mutant Registration Act, but the Sokovia Accords. And so now she has, getting intermeshed into her family life. And so let's jump in. What I really liked about this movie, and I did really like it a lot, was it was so different than other Marvel superhero movies. And it was... Mm-hmm. Partially like a Jason Bourne movie because you know she's not a superhero she is but she doesn't have superpowers, and it's partially this really fucked up family drama, and I just loved every scene with the family together, and Florence Pugh as Yelena, her sister, quote unquote sister, David Harbour as Alexei, her father, and Rachel Weisz as the mother, who it starts off as an episode of The Americans where they're undercover in Ohio,
yes,
1995.
And then you go home. I there was just so much interesting things about this. It was so unusual and so different in terms of the formula that these usually follow. But I really liked that a lot.
I had forgotten what these movies actually do. Like I was like the first time I hadn't seen a movie in a theater since the last Star Wars film. So that's a little bit of time. But I'd kind of forgotten how I haven't seen a 2-hour action film in a while where there's like the set piece and then this crazy opening sequence. And I thought that entire opening was wonderfully intimate and then just went off the rails in such a crazy way. It was really exciting. I thought that opening sequence was, it did a lot of work. It established the family. It was a really cool way to ground it. You sort of remembered their childhood for just a brief second, and then it just all went to pot. And then I realized, oh, wait, these are bad guys.
You forget, like, for a little bit, you start watching this other movie, and then you're like, oh, right, this is a superhero movie. So
it's like Terrence Malick vibe in the beginning of it.
Totally.
Great kid actors. If you're wondering why young Natasha looks a lot like Mila Jovovich, there's a very good reason for that. It's the daughter of Mila Jovovich.
No shit.
And
She was a good casting. She looked like she could have been young Scarlett Johansson.
I thought you were going to say it was a young Scarlett Johansson child. And nope. I was going to be really freaked out.
They lifted her from Ghost World and put her into that.
Yeah, so then, you know, we jump ahead to Natasha on the run, and she's got like a cutesy relationship with this arms dealer who's trying to get her out of there, and she gets a message to return to, not Russia, but to Budapest.
Budapest,
where referenced previously with Hawkeye as this crazy mission that they once had, she gets to go back to the safe house where she runs into her sister Yelena, who is the White Widow we've seen in the comics a lot, and I've read some reviews saying like slamming the film because Florence Pugh totally steals from Scarlett Johansson, but which she does, but.
What, like steals the screen or
like she
that's
takes
a bad review. don't cast somebody who's good.
Well, the thing this movie's about setting up the next Black Widow, Yelena. So,
and I think Scarlett Johansson has talked about that in the press. She's basically, in wrestling parlance, is putting Florence Pugh over.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Giving her a vehicle where she can steal the screen.
But the thing is, they're so great together. Yes, and I love exactly. that.
The dynamic.
Their relationship, the bickering, the making fun of their outfits, but then also secretly loving them. And the whole bit where she made fun of the jump and land bit, and then she did it herself. Yeah, like, fantastic. All of that was great.
The one of the funniest scenes in the movie, and it's sort of Pew sort of playing against what the joke, you think the joke's going to be, when she's talking about the vest, and she sort of keels over the passenger seat, and instead of complaining, she's like, "I knew you'd like the vest." I mean, there was a really her comic timing. I didn't see Little Women. I didn't see
Midsommar.
Yeah.
Midsommar.
So she came out of the blue for me, and I was really impressed actually how Johansson really was wonderfully generous.
Yes.
And let her, Florence, do her thing. And it was like watching such a sort of an established star really engage a co-star. In fact, all of the leads shared the room together in a really great ensemble way. It's almost like they had been working together for years. And this was like the movie version of their TV series. That's how familiar they felt.
Which is crazy because Black Widow as a character has been around for, the MCU version has been around for 10 years.
More than 10 years
at this point.
She's in the Hulk movie.
Iron Man 2 was her first appearance.
Right. No, she was in the Hulk movie before that.
No.
I think that was before Iron Man 2.
No, Iron Man 2 was her first
appearance. Iron Man 2 was her first one.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
Hulk movie was Ross.
That was so long ago.
Yeah.
That.
Oh, no. Iron Man 2 was like 2000 and what, 10?
Earlier.
9?
2 years between.
I don't even want to pretend. I don't even know. It's not important.
Oh, God. If any of us had computers, we could just.
So,
but I mean, given how long she's played this role, she still actually made it feel very fresh, which is kind of nice, too.
But I mean, to have, like, that's sort of a TV trope thing, like your long lost sister comes in season 4 or 5 or something, and it doesn't feel natural at all. But this felt totally natural, like, oh, of course. Yeah. And this relationship. Like you said, Mike, is it feels like that there is a history there.
Iron Man 2 is 2010, so this is her 11th year playing the character.
Wow.
The family was great. David Harbour as Alexei, the Red Guardian, the Russian Captain America, was terrific.
Big teddy bear.
What I really liked about the family dynamic is, you know, they all get together. They all get together back in Russia. Rachel Weisz. They all meet back at her house where she's a scientist. And
explain what she is, Connor.
I don't know what she is. She's a Russian agent.
She's a very experienced botanist. Wasn't she like gardening?
How does she spend her time?
Gardening.
You know, they have this adorable time around the table and working out their issues of this weird family that wasn't a real family. They were, put together by the Russian government.
She does mind control on pigs, is what I'm looking
right.
for.
And
oh, right. That's right.
Like, Paul, 2 weeks ago. The movie was 2 weeks ago. Okay. So, not all of us have seen it twice in 24 hours. So,
she made that pig asphyxiate.
I thought for sure that the parents were going to sacrifice themselves for their daughters. I thought for sure that was what was going to happen.
That seems like the arc they were setting up.
So happy that they all survived because I want to see them again in a sequel. Like,
same.
I was like, oh my God, they're going to live. This is great. Because it's a good testament to these four actors that were so good together, and the way that the plot folded in on itself. You know, the thing about Black Widow, she's always in control, even when she doesn't seem like she's in control. That's her bit in the Avengers movies. She makes herself seem vulnerable to Loki or to those bad guys in the beginning of Avengers, but really she's in control, and they play on your expectation of that happening, and you think it's not, and then it actually is happening. So that they did a really good job, I think, of balancing her character out with the rest of them and making her, she's still the hero of the story, but she gets a lot of help from her family, which is terrific.
And I like the mechanic of them discovering their past by their active investigating their current family. Like, you got to learn more and more about their family past, not by flashbacks, but just by their engagement. Like the scene between Harbour and Florence when she's just sitting by her bed, like, you don't get a lot of these kinds of moments in the typical sort of action film where it's just quiet for a while, right? And the whole line that was repeated a couple of times where she's like, "It was real for me," I felt like it was sort of oddly poignant in sort of this sort of where we're at, sort of COVID style. Like, we have all these memories of family and all this stuff has happened, right? And then we're going back, and it was I really felt like she I identified with that in a sort of a, I was sort of surprised how emotional that was, because, like, you know, these memories, that's all she had, and to have people say they weren't real is just like kind of an interesting, it was an interesting take. I loved it.
Yeah, she never got to make choices of her own.
Yeah,
and she was like put into this. They talk about how they for the photo album, it's a great little moment with Melina and Nat, where they talk about, oh, I remember this day where we, and she's not talking about a Christmas that they spent. It was, we did like Christmas, Easter, and Halloween all on the same day. It was a photo shoot. And she's like, and I knew there was nothing in the boxes, the gift boxes, but it was still exciting anyway, because that was the closest thing she had to, you know, any kind of family, domestic situation.
Josh, what did you think of the family dynamic?
I think that was the strongest part of the movie. I think it was interesting that you really spent a lot of time not knowing where they were coming from, because you couldn't trust anything. You know, given the first scene in the movie, you know, you thought, oh, that's her parents. And then you find out, no, it's not her parents, because it's weird, because the mom gets hurt and then she gets taken away. And I was like, oh, the Russians are breaking up the family. And then... you know, you find out later, like, no, that was the only time they ever spent together, because it wasn't terribly clear until they tell you later, like, Natasha knew what was going on.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and that's why she had that forlorn look on her face, and she sort of had always seen it coming.
And she was able to disarm that guard.
Like, right, because she knew that Yelena was
being sent to the Red Room.
Yeah.
And what it also did was, it's funny because I think this movie springboarded off what the Americans set up. They were like, okay, we have to do a lot less work now, you know, in terms of, you know, like, why don't they have an accent? Why don't they? And it's funny because they didn't have the accents. And then when they switch, you know, they were talking Russian, and then they come back and now they all have Russian accents. I was like, you know, you all speak perfectly unaccented Russian as well, which just this weird thing I was thinking about. And, you know, you thought, like, they made wrong choices. You know, Rachel Weisz, by the way, this is almost a James Bond movie, and I was like, hey, this is James Bond's wife. that occurred to me at some point.
Well, at one point, this movie was going to come out the same weekend as James Bond.
Can I tell you, too, that at the beginning, I thought, wow, she looks amazing. And their youth-smoothing features are getting stronger than they used to be.
Yes, yes.
And then she came out, I was like, what the hell? and then she came back later, I was like, oh, good, right, she's my age. That makes more sense.
David Harbour, too. I was like, oh, look at him. He looks pretty good.
Yeah, I think that was the strongest part. I think you know,
overall, the first act is really strong.
Yeah, I mean, overall, my opinion of the thing is that it's good, but it's not great. Like, I thought it was really fun, or whatever, but it didn't feel like it was breaking a lot of ground. I think you made the point that it was different than expected, and I think that's really good. But it also felt very apart from the Marvel Universe, I think, which is the thing that happens in the TV shows, is that they get it some time away, but the movies I kind of expect to be connected to the larger thing. So it was a little bit more explaining how we got to where we had started.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always my favorite thing. It wasn't terrible. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it's an origin, you know, and it does go a long way in explaining how she is, why she is.
It's a dual origin.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely.
It's a handoff.
We learn about Natasha, and we learn about Yelena, and, you know, by the end of it, Yelena is basically Black Widow. But
I guess what's good about it is that, you know, we get to spend a lot of time with these characters, and we like being around them, and we understand them. But from like a plot standpoint, I didn't give a shit.
Interesting. I mean, it's almost like the side Star Wars movies were supposed to be, right? These sort of side sort of parentheticals. The characters
movie
are.
That really felt off to the side for me. It's like you took a step back.
I felt like Captain Marvel was off to the side too.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, well, I guess we hadn't spent time with her yet. Like, we didn't know her. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was our introduction to Captain Marvel.
Yeah, good
point. And that took place in 80, whenever it took place, earlier, 90. And so, but we hadn't been with her after that. So
yeah, it's the consequence of the character having died. You know, there's the only way you can do is go backwards and fill in a hole.
But it's I mean, it's ridiculous on a whole bunch of levels that this movie took this long to come out. This movie should have come out, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yes.
On the other hand, this movie doesn't come out 5, 6, 7 years ago because, again, this movie serves to serve up a new Black Widow. So it's a different story if that comes out prior to Natasha dying. So the main villain is Dreykov, the guy who runs the Red Room, the sadist Russian
agent. You want to talk about not being able to do a Russian accent.
Ray Winstone. If you just whisper enough, you just can't really tell what accent it is.
I'm sorry, I can't do it.
So we're talking.
Dreykov, big friend of Bill Clinton, Condoleezza Rice, showed up in the title sequence. That was kind of wild.
So again, not knowing what was happening at one point early on, when you know Black Widow's getting away from her pursuers, someone says initiate the Taskmaster protocol, and I went and then cut to the skull mask with a hood on, and I literally in the theater went, whoa!
Because, cool.
Because
I a little bit remembered when they said it. I was like, all right, this is a thing.
Because I had no idea Taskmaster was in the movie at all, and we had just finished reading the book. And again,
it would have been awesome if Taskmaster was in the movie.
Right. So it's a very different Taskmaster, but I did not expect to see Taskmaster on the screen.
Well, good news.
I very much knew that Taskmaster in this design was going to be in this movie. So
yeah, when I walked into the theater, the first thing I saw was a character poster for Taskmaster. I was like, oh god, how did I miss that when I walked into the theater? But
the internet's kind of mad about the reveal on Taskmaster.
Well, the thing is, in the beginning,
the internet is mad.
With Taskmaster,
this is a particular thing they're mad about today.
When Taskmaster shows up, I thought Taskmaster's moving strangely, and then. About halfway through, I realized, oh, Taskmaster's a woman, because women and men walk differently.
For sure.
You know, the hips move differently. So you're thinking, I think it was a woman trying to walk like a man, not to blow the reveal, therefore her movements were kind of strange, but I was like, what is going on with Taskmaster's walking? And then, oh, it's a woman pretending to be a man, and then it was revealed to be the daughter of Dreykov. But once they did the flashback to the bomb, I was like, oh,
Bond girl, I believe. Wasn't she in one of the Bond movies?
I don't know. I don't even know who played her. I'm looking it up.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yes, Josh, it was definitely not Taskmaster, but it was Taskmaster.
It was like Claw or Galactus or Hawkeye, for that matter. You know, I feel like it was a character that I really liked that was kind of a waste because it had no connection to the things I like about the other one. As soon as I saw that mask, that motorcycle gang member mask with the goggles, I thought that's not going to be okay.
Go ahead.
I mean, it was like, you know, the basic rudimentary elements were there, and I was like, there's no reason for that hood, but I am glad it's there.
The hood kind of makes no sense for what the character is here.
Yeah,
like you would not want to have that periphery like broken off in your, you know, you wouldn't want. The speculation when the trailers first came out for this 17 years ago was that was Hawkeye, because the prominent shot in the trailer was the bow and arrow.
Well, that's the whole point of Taskmaster.
Oh, that's Clint, because we knew this was a flashback, but we didn't know exactly when it was set. So people thought maybe it was going to be
Clint.
People
don't understand Taskmaster.
But additionally, also, I think that Taskmaster's thing is really cool. Like, he sees something and can do that. But I don't think that was rendered very well. They turned it into like a mirror thing. And so, you know, I was like, well, all the Avengers are trained, or whoever's trained the Avengers actors to fight was the same guy. So they all look the same when they fight. It's something that maybe comes across better in comic books, but it would have been cool if they could have portrayed that a little more. I've never seen it move. Maybe there's some way to do it that sort of shows how they are picking up those moves, or they look over at a TV and there's a gymnast and then they do that, like something to actually show that it's not just a good fighter and can hold a shield and or bow and arrow.
Also, having a hood and an actual skull face is just kind of like, it's a very flamboyant, cool comic book design, and they made it very Dick's Sporting Goods.
You have to lean into that if you're going to do it. You know,
that's fine. Right.
They didn't lean into the.
Yeah,
they didn't lean into it. They had
they could have done that and not called it Taskmaster.
There's no reason for it to be called Taskmaster. It could have been any other of a million lesser tier Marvel Easter egg nods that most people don't know, and then actually use that character for something cool, some cool double agent mercenary, really interesting gray area bad guy, you know, that that would have been better. But, you know, like, I'm a very small audience that.
Yeah, see, I think the Taskmaster design is cool, like the original design, but
it's cool,
like,
in the comic book from
1986. I don't have a huge attachment to the character from.
Listen,
from
she didn't have pirate boots on. I didn't have a cape. So.
To be honest, there's not really a consistent character. Lately, over the past few years, they've sort of put them into some sort of a character mold, but that's changed a lot. So it's not that, but either way, what happened was, there's no reason for it to be Taskmaster, so it kind of bums, you know. It's going to be like if Kang shows up in something and it's nothing like Kang, you're like, well, what a waste of Kang.
Right. I just was very happy in that brief moment where mm-hmm. they said Taskmaster and they cut to Taskmaster and I went, whoa! And that, like, it was a perfect moment of joy.
You did the Leo pointing at the TV thing.
In my head.
Yeah.
I think like, a good example of that, you know, doing well is Red Guardian. Yeah. It's great use of that kind of character. Like, it could have been anything, you know, but... Yeah, well, that was funny. Like, they said Crimson Dynamo. He was like, no, Red Guardian. Great. And I was like, oh, they can still use Crimson Dynamo.
And he was great as the washed-up Russian Captain America who had, you know, who had toys and...
And I like how they very casually showed his superpowers. When he lifts the thing to get out of the way of the plane when they're escaping.
That was fantastic, yeah.
But he's also old and fat and slow.
Yeah,
I love it. It was a terrible prison breakout plan. Yeah. It was just like
all of it.
All right, here,
wrong.
Get over there, and then just do exactly what you shouldn't. I mean, I realized he was being stupid or whatever. Like, there's no plan at all. Like, they had him walk into the middle. I was like, he needs to move. It was very frustrating.
And his unrelenting self-centeredness, I just kept coming up over and over again when he's like, did he ever talk about me?
They found some way to make that endearing.
Yes.
Yeah.
In spite
like he's
of
a bad dad without being like a alcoholic, like, yeah, he's, you he's, know,
yeah, he's a
child abuser.
He's not an asshole.
He cared about his daughters. Idiot. He just was an
I mean, he is an asshole. Narcissist. But, like, he's, yeah, it's because he's egotistical and
he's
self-absorbed.
Yeah, but he just doesn't have any
intelligence. But he does mean well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it's almost like whenever the action started, not the action, but whenever the bad guy showed up, I was like, okay, get these guys out of the way. Let's get back to the family.
I mean, he's going to be, that's going to be, what's the bad guy's name? Dracov?
Dracov.
Yeah.
Ray Winstone. I mean,
it's completely forgettable.
Yeah.
I mean, it at no point did it seem like a threat. I kept trying to make sense of his secret helicarrier
base
that inside was all done in like Soviet era shitty wood and like an ugly, like it was such
that's,
a weird
that's
thing.
That's kind of funny that they, I mean, they don't
really
totally lean into it, but it's like
pretty
it's
close.
Kind of fun.
Yeah, no, but the half of it looked like that. And then half of it was the ultra high tech Marvel, you know, look.
Yeah, like on the outside, it's like, oh, it's a Marvel.
But even like the hallways, like where all the people, all the girls were training, but like over in his office, it was just strange.
He's comfortable. He's comfortable in the Soviet era. He wants that's a
designer.
But also,
like, what was his deal? Because he didn't seem to actually work for the Russians anymore. He's just like, I'm in control of everything. And I was like, well, why? How? What do you do?
Illuminati, Josh.
He controls them through the power of the widows. You know,
but why? Control them for what? What does he do?
Makes a lot of money killing
people.
He
murders
people
and steals stuff.
Toppling governments and having power. Why does any dictator want power?
He's like he is like a Bond villain in that way.
So why do I care?
Because he's evil.
Because he had a podcast to do on Friday.
And because he's like an extreme misogynist. And they do that, but they don't necessarily say all that much with it. It's just kind of like, yep, I hate that guy.
Well, I mean, there was a sort of a theme, though, of like, I mean, I didn't like the character, but I did, the theme about recovering from abusive relationships and all that kind of stuff was a really interesting through line and made for some, you know, when I just sort of thought about what these girls were going through and just like what people go through in relationships, you know, we see it in the family dynamic, we see it with this guy, They use it as an interesting vehicle to tell that kind of experience. I was unimpressed with him, but I was empathetic to the characters in a way that surprised me.
I don't know that that is. I get the point. I get where they're coming from. I see what they're trying to say, but I don't know if they got there by way of plot. Meaning, like, you know, yes, there's a big metaphor going on there, but right. Like, I don't think that's enough to hang it on. That's like, that's making a statement, not telling a story. If that tracks.
Well, that's not the plot. That's a sort of a secondary theme that comes out through the fight against Dracov. He is running an evil army of assassins around the world.
Right, but he's still just this person. Like, there's no real connection to him.
He's a mechanism.
Yes. Yeah.
He's not that thing. Right.
So therefore, like, you know, ooh, he's scary. He's done these bad things, but there's not a personal connection to him in that way that, you know, that you'd really
come
to care about a villain or not care about them, but care, you know what I mean? Not
understand. Empathize with or something
Some
of the best villains like make a good point sometimes. He never makes a good point.
Yeah, he's just a
villain. You're like, I can see where you're coming from. This guy is I think
there's
girls
no,
are trash.
Yeah, there's no point of view.
He calls them this unlimited resource that has no value. And it's like, that's just awful. Look, there's nothing that I can latch on to with.
So
what
the bad guy is misogyny.
Right.
And it's boring.
Yeah, I didn't think it was
misogyny
boring.
Falls to the background because of the strength of the character stuff. The character stuff carries that, and them going through sort of a personal arc, and how they feel about themselves. Like they're wounded people who then come to have a sense of pride about this family unit that they have. It's not a found family; it's a forced family.
Mm-hmm.
But through their commiseration, like they find something to be proud of that they have, because like so much and a lot of the stuff that I think particularly Whedon did in the Avengers movies, the first two, with Nat was like really icky, with her feeling like a monster because she couldn't have kids. Like he went into weird places with that.
Yeah,
and like. But that is part of her overall arc in these movies, that she has this ledger and she feels like I'm a bad person and I have to atone for these things, not to become a better person, but just because I have to make up for it. Where by the end of this, she feels like maybe more of a whole person because she has these people that care about her and that she cares about. So there's an arc there that you can, you know, that you can put your, that you can latch onto rather than this spy plot that is just sort of like B grade.
And it also becomes a tragedy because she finds the family only to go off to die fighting.
Right. Bananas. Yeah. It's like it's bittersweet, and that's I like that about it.
I mean, it was really interesting when that post-credit sequence came on, when I realized what was going on, when she went to her sister's grave. I actually did feel that. I was like, oh, shit. Like, and even though it was a forced family, it was still a found family, right? And just like we said earlier, it was like, it was real to her. I thought that was, I was surprised that they were able to get so much for me out of a creation of a family unit that, like I said at the beginning, I had no idea what I was walking into, and now I have these fond memories of this family, and I thought that was a good trick for this kind of film.
You know, I like them all together, but I like the fact more that I don't think it was so much of a cohesive family unit as they all wanted it to be that.
Yeah.
It's a fake family, and they all know it, but the best thing for them to do is sort of pretend it's okay, and to me, that feels much more genuine and interesting than we've all found each other and now there's heart and love.
Yeah.
Because that's not it. Because at any point you thought, all of these people are severely fucked up and they are grasping right here. And it is not, it is a tenuous grasp.
Just like a lot of families, right?
Yeah. Yes,
a lot of families
exactly. Stay
together because they really, they want it to be a family, but it's just straight up not. You go to the holidays, and you're like, this is terrible, but we're supposed to do this because we're supposed to be a family.
And there is this weird comfort in it that doesn't necessarily make sense, and that is the best you have. And so to me, I think what's going to happen is a lot of people are going to talk about this, like, they found a place together. They found a family. And I'm like, I don't think they did. I think they found the absolute best they could.
Yes.
And that is interesting to me.
See, I don't agree with that at all. Like, they found a family. You find a family where you find it. Not necessarily
families.
Blood, but you find
two
a family.
Families, Josh.
I think that this has to do with perspective. Like, you have a family that you're super close to, and it's really important to you, like the people you grew up with. And I'm like, well, you know, you ended up with these people, and you do your best with it. Like, maybe it's just what you're reading into it, but. Obviously, like, the relationship between the two widows is going to be the strongest thing out of it. But, like, let's not forget Rachel Weisz called the cops on them immediately. You know, David Harbour just wanted to get out of prison. You know, he wanted to do the best. He's completely unable to do so.
She was controlled to do so.
That's a good point.
She didn't want to call the cops on them. She had to break the control that Dracoff had over her. And that's when they hatched the plan.
Did she sever the nose, the nerve that allows her to smell everything? Is she done smelling and tasting from now on?
That's the idea.
No, she smashed it back. She smashed it back.
You can't smash a nerve back. I thought she broke her nose and then reset it.
Then she punched herself in the face again.
When they set that up, I thought she was going to have Melina do the pig thing to her where she couldn't breathe.
Oh.
And then
while
she was like without oxygen, like she would have to kill him.
That would have been better. That's a better idea than smashing your face on the desk. You know, because the other thing that you could do is plug your fucking nose. Put a mask on.
It's less dramatic.
I get it, but, you know, it seems like it's a very easy thing to trick, especially since he told her. It's
yeah.
The pheromones.
There's
okay,
not really
cool.
a good character reason for why you would tell. I mean, hubris,
yeah,
you could say,
Bond.
But like, it's just kind of just like
it's that, yes, Bond villain.
It's
thing.
Every villain explaining
yes.
their Bond plot Bond to the Bond. Hero. That's
and if there's a movie you get to get away with that in,
yeah,
it's Black Widow
it's
and Russian
absolutely.
Villains.
Yeah. I thought this was sort of interesting in terms of it kind of led to TV shows in a weird way. I didn't feel like this was handing off to any movies.
No, it's not. It's handing off to the Hawkeye show.
So the Hawkeye show.
And it reminded me of the I mean, a lot of the fighting and stuff reminded me.
Sorry, the Jeremy Renner show.
Is that, yeah, it was interesting, just like, you know, this movie was supposed to come out a while ago, and since then we've seen, you know, Falcon and Winter Soldier, and this, I was curious to see what this would have been like on a small screen if it felt more like that, because there were certainly cinematic parts to this, even though
I don't know if we can say it, because our angle was so fucking weird on this movie.
We saw it in a trapezoid, not a rock.
I don't even know if the directing was any good.
But
I don't think it brought a lot more. I mean, the set piece at the end, you know, with the big floating space station, sky station, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that was probably bigger than anything you saw in Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Same.
But other than that,
I think it's on the level of Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
It seemed like
the movie, Captain America.
Yeah, the movie,
It's very hard after Endgame. In terms of these solo movies, to do scale, but I think Connor hit the nail on the head in the beginning when he said it feels like a Bourne movie.
Yeah.
It feels very much like that, and I think it's refreshing, just the same way as Ant-Man was refreshing after the first Avengers movie.
Yeah,
like you have these
palate
big
cleanser.
Scale, like they feel like those are the event movies, and then. To have something like this, yes, it does feel like it's smaller, but there's something a little cozy about that too.
It's more intimate in all ways, mostly. I mean, I thought the end sequence was kind of jarringly out of place for me. I like the practical stuff much more. There was a couple of fights that happened sort of on top of each other. The kitchen fight came really quickly after the opening sequence, but. I kind of liked the mostly practical aspect of all this. So when they were doing the wind tunnel CGI flying through the air thing,
it really actually kind of irritated me. I kind of wish they didn't do that.
Though. Yeah, it's a fight in the sky.
I was thinking about that as I was watching it, because obviously the parts where they're running around the rooftops or whatever, I was like, oh, these look like recent Bond movies.
Yeah.
And those, well, to me...
parkour stuff.
Yeah, those to me are kind of the best example of that thing going right now. If you think about, you know, Casino Royale.
Totally.
There's some outdoor set pieces that are amazing, and I was kind of expecting that, and I thought, and they didn't get there. Maybe that wasn't their point or whatever, but that's where I was like, oh, here's a real chance to really do some scenes like that with women, you know, and it was like a B plus version of that, and it and I wanted to be really impressed. Like, there's stuff in the, I still think of, there's a thing where, I don't remember which one it was, but like Bond chases the guy up the crane. That's, you know, and they're way up in the, you know,
Casino Royale. Yeah,
Casino Royale is the one I think that is, like, the best version, and it wasn't up to that.
No, it was different. I mean, they were specifically showcasing parkour in Casino Royale, whereas this was,
I get that, just, but like, this was
the rooftop.
This was the character who could do that kind of scene, and that's the thing that I wanted. I was waiting to be really impressed by something like that, but
they were digital Scarlet falling down scaffolding and stuff, like, and that's okay, but like, yeah.
I wanted the action sequences to have a little more punch, because she's supposed to be the best thing on two legs, you know, outside of Captain America or whatever. She's supposed to be super impressive. If you think about, what was that last comic book that we just read? Was it the Taskmaster miniseries? Yeah. Where, like, everybody was scared shitless of her. And I thought, that is exactly the perspective they need to have on this character. A little like Batman, like, just don't mess with her, because she will win. Mm-hmm. And that she's not that in these movies, but I thought it'd be really cool to set her up in that way.
Yeah, it's tough because you have to play with the characterization they've already spent 11 years building, which isn't
But the fact is, she has already, you know, in the course of this movie, let's say before it, she's already fought off these giant hordes of aliens among the Company of Gods and was able to keep her place. And none of these people are so super... And none of these people are so super powered that she wouldn't be able to handle them really easily. And I like the fact that, like, when it came down to, like, all the widows, she's like, well, I can handle all these widows myself. That was probably the best example of that thing. But, you know, I think that there was a chance to, and I don't know what the, you know, when this was completed or whatever, but I think it was before the pandemic. So there wasn't, like, you know, they had the time and the money and it just could have been more.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it seemed to be they were going for a very specific kind of size and scale of it, and that the director seemed much more interested in telling the family story.
I wouldn't call it cheap.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it, like, cheap at all.
It felt like.
But cool, I mean, but if level. You did, but yes, if you put it next to, like, Casino Royale or something like that, it does look like it's a slightly smaller scale.
You can do all that relationship stuff and family stuff, and then also blow people away with the action sequences.
No, I wasn't not blown away by the action sequences.
You either are or not.
No, I mean, like, they weren't bad. I think they were bad. I think Paul was correct. I think it seems very much like Captain America Winter Soldier.
Yeah, that's what I kept thinking about.
I don't know that Kate Shortland is as good of an action director as the Russo brothers are, but...
She's probably also not as good at doing Arrested Development.
But, you know, I had no problem. I mean, other than the idea that I had to keep putting aside the idea that she would survive any of these falls, she kept falling, you know, falling out of buildings and things. I was like, okay, well, she's dead.
I can't remember if she has no super soldier about her at all. So she's just straight up human.
She's just getting hurt.
In the comics, it's hard because she's supposed to be like a Cold War era spy, but they keep, you know, her story keeps changing in the comics, but definitely not in this. She's just a regular spy. She's like Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
Or, sorry.
Well, no, she's actually related to the character that she comes from in the comics.
Right, not Hawkeye. I'm Jeremy Renner. So the in addition to Yelena visiting
Marvel Cinematic Universe's Clint Barton. That's, I believe,
Natasha Romanoff's grave. She gets recruited by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who we last saw, who was supposed to be
Contessa. Contessa is it?
She's from
Contessa,
the comics.
Her name.
It's Contessa something. I don't
know. Contessa de Vesevinavisa Belgabelga.
Sure. We last saw her in...
Did you just yada, yada, yada?
See?
We saw her recruiting John Walker in Falcon Winter Soldier, and here she is recruiting Yelena to get revenge on the man she says was responsible for your sister dying. And she shows her a photo of Marvel Studios' Jeremy Renner. And so that is what's supposed to lead into the Hawkeye or Marvel Studios Jerry Renner show coming
can
to
I tell you
TVs near you.
How, like, we've been through these end credit sequences for a really long time, you know, and I was like, all right, what's it going to be? And I was like, Elaine.
Yeah.
it was totally an underwhelming thing because, we've seen every version of it. I get it. And she showed up, but like, I don't care about that character yet. I don't know anything about that character. Yeah.
The kind of anti-Avengers,
the Legion of Super,
heroes.
Legion of Doom.
Whatever.
She's forming the also-rans. She's the new Nick Fury.
I was surprised.
I was really hankering for like a connection to everything else right then. But I haven't internalized the idea that that's over.
Well, because we haven't really entered the new era, because this is taking place in the old era. So we're still not in the post, whatever the fuck the last one was called, Avengers era.
You know, what's interesting, though, is that if this had gone in the right direction, because I did not understand it, I think it would have been much more interesting if she showed up at the end of this movie having not seen Falcon and Winter Soldier. Like, what the fuck is Elaine doing
there?
You'd
be like, what the hell?
Well, and then when she showed up in Winter Soldier, it would have been like, oh, you would have seen that connection.
That was what was supposed to happen.
Yeah, that makes sense. That would have worked a lot better.
It was funny because Whit and I, we went out after to eat, and we just happened to be across the booth from the movie's creators who addressed the crowd before. And we're like, I was walking over, I'm like, wait a second, the Elaine character, this was supposed to come out before Winter Soldier. And we were like, wasn't she supposed to? They're like, yeah, that was the whole problem with Winter Soldier. It kind of blew the surprise. But in a strange way, I think it worked the same way. You were going to be like, who the hell? I didn't understand what she was doing in Winter Soldier either. It was the same amount. So it's still tied together well. I still don't know what she's doing. It's not like the scene from her character in Winter Soldier gave you any clues either. But I did think it was funny, like they kind of thought, oh, it was spoiled. And I'm like, well, not a lot of spoil. I mean, you still didn't know. We still don't know what she's all about. So in a weird way, it just sort of reinforced the character. It still worked. I guess that's what I'm just trying to say. It still actually worked.
It just feels like a weird Agent of Chaos kind of like, what the hell?
And also, it isn't a character.
Sure, Phase 4.
It isn't a character that is very well known. There are other better known
characters.
I don't know.
I have no idea who she is.
She's like a Nick Fury supporting character from the Steranko book, apparently.
Oh.
Like, she's in there somewhere. I think she's the femme fatale in that book.
Oh.
And there are so many female characters that are just waiting there that the mention of their name would make alarm bells go off in nerds' heads. This wasn't one of them.
Contessa Valentina Allegra de Fontaine.
Easy
that sounds like
say.
Steranko to me.
Rolls off the tongue.
Just rolls right off.
I it's weird. I like it.
I think it's cool. Yeah. I mean,
it's unexpected. Offensive. You know.
I'm here, you know, from the I wish this made me feel more of something camp. You know.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
You're allowed and to.
That's just another example of it, I think.
I do think it's interesting though that we're in this era, like even back when this was supposed to come out, it was still setting up for a TV show, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of this interesting space that we're in where there's going to be this, perhaps this interplay. I mean, is there a new movie coming out?
Yes.
Do we know that?
The next one will be Shang-Chi in September.
Oh, but is that
I saw that trailer
do you mean
at the
a Black
beginning.
Widow movie? Or?
Is that a thing? Like, is that a real, is that part?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I know the character's a thing, but I just didn't know if it was.
No, it's Marvel. It's their next.
Yeah, no, it's part of the universe. It's the next chapter.
I think you're gonna start. See, that the thing is that we have all been working for 13 years in this, like,
it's chaos, Josh.
Main event. You know, like, it's been basically like two Civil War comic book events. All the big books are in it. You're starting to see everything for the first time. Now that they move into the next thing, you know, it's going to be the side books. It's going to be the ones that sell 15,000 copies because they got to put something in there. And in a way, going to be slightly less exciting because you're 20-minute movies in. It's not going to have that same new feeling. They're going to have to be really inventive, I think.
And also, you're part of the great thing about when these came out is, like, I can't wait to see how they do this character that I've grown up with. Now it's like, okay. I mean, these are the side characters.
You weren't really waiting to see Shang-Chi, is what
you said. No, I wasn't. I mean, I'd be happy to see him, but I just, this is not. And so
I hope it's great, but it did look like, I was like, that just looks like a regular crappy Kung Fu movie. like kung fu sci-fi movie. Like
I haven't watched the trailer, but
it's cool.
You know, they're rebuilding. They have to rebuild
the Eternals.
Yeah, the Eternals is a whole other.
But they
have to rebuild this universe. You know, we spent all that time reaching to the Thanos War.
Yeah.
All those films, everything was going to one point. We got there. We had the giant spectacle, and now what? Now we have alternate Black Widow and Shang-Chi. Like, they're gonna have to rebuild the Avengers with a bunch of characters who aren't Thor, Captain America, and Iron Man.
And it's almost impossible to be that good and give you that feeling again.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way.
Unless they announce a Star Fox movie.
I mean, obviously, if Hero shows up, then I'm there with a sign.
Right. Black Knight's going to be in the Eternals, so we could be getting, like, in late 80s version of the Avengers.
But characters that when they show She-Hulk. Up, like, these are characters when they show up in comic books now, only people like me and Connor are like, well, all right. You know, it's not... This isn't making kids buy t-shirts.
To be fair...
It'll be interesting to see what does.
Hold on. To be fair... Where we're going is X-Men and Fantastic Four. That's where they get saved. Is they have a whole new universe now to reintroduce into the Marvel. And so, if things don't pan out with the Eternals, and they don't pan out with Shang-Chi, we're not very soon away, but we're not too far from Marvel Studios' Fantastic Four, Marvel Studios' X-Men. So that will be what happens.
And to what Josh was just saying, I remember sitting. I was sitting in a parking lot. Year two ago outside a supermarket, and there was a kid walking in with his mom, and this little kid who's like maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old, had a t-shirt with Groot on it.
Right.
Kids who are 4 or 5 years old don't buy their own clothes, their parents do? Because my kid had a Nirvana shirt and he didn't give a shit about it.
And he was holding a credit card with his name
on it. Listen. Groot was adorable, and everybody will admit that there's no reason they thought that would take off. But as soon as that movie started, you're like, this is fantastic. It's going to be very difficult for them to keep that up.
I get that that's...
But we've been saying that for over 10 years.
You make a good point that parents buy the stuff for their kids. But I think the kids aren't, like, dragging and screaming going into Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mine are, but yeah.
I think they dig it.
Absolutely. Look,
we've been saying since... Thor and Captain America, which was more than 10 years ago. When is this going to go off the rails? When are we going to encounter a character that the general public goes, and that hasn't happened yet?
I don't think it's going to ever really go off the rails.
Because it's the brand
smart.
Now. The brand is.
But I think that what is going to happen is that it's going to feel less impactful and less interesting. Because
the kids,
they're searching now.
And also kids are growing up and they're not being raised on these characters. I mean, this is a larger conversation for sure, but the 12, 8-year-olds, all these folks, they're not reading comics and they're not into these characters. They could give a shit. My friends' kids don't care about Star Wars at all. They don't care about a lot of this stuff. So, but that's the challenge ahead.
The two things that are happening though is that they have to figure out who they're going to appeal to. And up until this point, they've been very successful at appealing to old men.
No, they appeal to everyone.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
I think this was a broad appeal. I guess we'll see how it does.
Well, we have no idea how it does. We're in a new world where nothing matters in terms of numbers.
That's true.
But these movies appeal to this literally everybody on the planet. That's why they make $1 billion. But
Josh said searching. I say being more. I say they have to be more inventive. They have to be more creative. They have to think outside the box.
You're losing the star power of Thor, Captain America, and Iron Man. You're going to have to do
that. So when I'm here saying this felt like a pretty basic action movie with a really cool Marvel overlay and some fun relationships, is that going to be enough to keep on top of the world in terms of this entertainment thing? If everyone
agrees with you, because I think 3 out of 4 people here don't agree with you there. We thought it was fantastic.
Well, we also thought Superman was fantastic.
Well, wait, easy.
Hold on. Mike and I have had 2 weeks to roommate on this movie.
I mean, we're not in. I'm not in Man of Steel territory here at all. So
no, I'm not.
You recorded that. You recorded that review I was writing my review, which was very different
and very correct. I think, but this is always the way that I approach things. You know, if something is good but not terribly interesting or innovative for me, I find it boring. Almost more so than if something is a huge whiff. Like, I don't think... I thought it was fun. I had a good time. Like I said, I think it was really good. I didn't think it was great. totally. Because there wasn't something was missing for me, you know, that I think I wanted out of it. But what I'm saying is that special feeling of, holy shit, that's Captain America.
Right.
That is harder to recapture.
Yeah, yeah, no, everyone's agreeing with you there.
I agree.
Yeah,
totally agree.
Oh, yeah, totally
agree.
Don't disagree with that.
They have to work, you know, a lot harder. They burn through their top tier characters.
Right, and as you have, every time you add more Marvel movies and characters and stuff to it, each one subsequently gets less important and less interesting that's new because it's just part of a greater whole. Like, it becomes, whereas before, you know, you had like the four or five main characters and that was the whole thing. And now there's 70 characters and each movie cannot be as important as the one when you only had five.
Look what happened with the Star Wars stuff. I mean, they went down that path and they were like, oh shit, stop. Right.
Really? Because I was under the impression that the last thing that happened in Star Wars was Special Edition Return of the Jedi. And then The Mandalorian. Those are the only things that have been Star Wars releases.
Well, okay, think of how late in the game of the Marvel Studios or Marvel Cinematic Universe Black Panther was.
Yep.
And how special that was.
And I think that is a really good example of having to really go do something.
Yeah.
I remember walking into that movie and having very low expectations because I thought there's a lot of ways this would go wrong. And the great part about being is that the prize, like, that was fantastic. And I just hadn't expected it at all.
Yeah.
And I think it's just going to become more challenging. And I think that, again, not bad. I think that I see it on the wall.
I agreed. And also Black Panther is sort of revelatory in the world building too. I mean, I think these are very different films.
That was the key,
different things.
I'm just saying that what's on the horizon, I'm just saying like the possibilities for the future. You know,
I'm feeling less confident
towards,
that I'm
they're working
be
towards
wild.
Young Avengers. I think that's going to be very special and revelatory and meaningful for.
Have
a
they
lot
said
of people.
That for sure?
They're moving towards
for
it.
The people who
well,
are
that's internet speculation.
Now?
Yeah, I'm with Josh. I don't think the future looks nearly as bright as it used to when we used to write about this stuff way back in the day and couldn't wait to see what they were going to do.
It'll be at the point where everyone isn't going to be the greatest thing ever, and you'll really be looking for the gems, just like in comics. You're looking like, well, Jesus, did you see this awesome issue of Taskmaster, you know, that no one expected? Whereas in the main Avengers book, yeah, that's what it is. It's what it does. I think it's, you know, it's just diluting. And I think that, you know, the idea is I am so used to the amazing track record of like almost everyone being like, wow, that was like you have to think hard about the Marvel movies that you didn't really like, which is amazing. But that cannot keep up forever. Kevin Feige is going to die eventually.
I could have taken him out.
It's
going to
be a long
time
before
they start
making these.
We were 5 feet away from him. I wish we had talked earlier, Josh. We would have sent him a note.
Take care of yourself, pal.
Yeah, eat better.
Not only does he have to stay healthy, he's going to stay interested because at a certain point, he's going to be sitting on a mountain of money and just going, I don't really want to do this anymore.
He's got two mountains, I think.
You know what I mean? But
yeah, I get it. No, I get it.
You know,
he's going to retire.
That fire, keeping that spark going and like, you know, that single vision, that's tough.
Yeah. Well, the future is going to be interesting. We have Shang-Chi, we have the Eternals, and then who knows? Like, again, we don't know where this is going. We knew where the story was going for 10 years. The story is now over.
Yeah,
we'll be getting a Spider-Man 3 trailer at some point. People are sort of champing at the bit.
There's
like, they're going to announce it this weekend. And like, it's coming.
The difference of my life of not being on social media at all and Paul talking is fantastic.
It's pretty different
because I'm like,
I didn't
what
know
the
all that
hell
stuff.
Is?
I'm not really on social media all that much either. You but
know
I don't know.
I have no idea what's going
on. You've got your finger on
Sam Raimi's going to do it.
It's awesome.
It's got Doctor Strange and Spider-Man. That's a
Wait,
fun.
Sam Raimi's really going to do it?
Yeah.
Is this true?
Didn't we give him his shot? I mean, right. I loved Sam Raimi. I love what he has done, but, you know, you got three.
Do you know anything about the cast of that movie?
I don't know anything about anything.
Nothing. I know nothing about anything.
I don't know what's happening tomorrow.
Is okay.
Zendaya?
No, I mean beyond the core cast. I mean, I'm talking about...
We obviously don't
know. Don't spoil
actors
anything.
From, actors
don't spoil
from
anything.
Cast.
Don't spoil anything.
Back.
We have nothing.
I'm not spoiling anything.
Well, I don't think we have to worry about Tobey.
I love it. I like how we're trying not to have spoilers in a spoiler show. We actually
hold on, Paul. Hold on.
Technically,
whoa. He's not directing Spider-Man. He's directing Doctor Strange.
I'm sorry, but he's also going. But okay, that's why. All right, But who directed those two Doctor movies Strange? Are Does like sort of know? Intermingled.
Anyway,
the Spider-Man 3 is going to have Doctor Strange in it, and then Doctor Strange is dealing with the fallout of WandaVision. And there's a lot of multiverse stuff happening.
I'm already tired.
I would like them to switch.
But yeah, you're out. Sorry, Sam Raimi's not doing Spider-Man.
I would like to see them switch the dynamic from Doctor Strange being annoyed to everybody and Peter Parker being the, you know, like little weird kid to the part where they are kind of in comics where Peter Parker shows up and they're like peers. Like not fully as switch, but it'd be cool to see them start, you know, interacting like chums more often.
Well, all of the older peers are dying off.
So. That's true. That's true. Well, yeah. But, I mean, as far as I understand,
he's going Benedict to be the old man of the Marvel Universe.
As far as I understand, Benedict Cumberbatch has never turned down a role, so I don't think he's going anywhere. Well, hello.
All right, let's wrap this up because we can go on all night, but it's getting late, and I'm going to pass out from the heat. So, Black Widow, here's Paul's favorite segment. We're going to do ratings for Black Widow out of five. Five stars. Fuck. Romo.
I'm just going to say, I want to say, I'll just round up to four stars. And it might be because I'm just feeling optimistic today. But I didn't really like it when I left it, but then as I've had more distance, I was surprised how much it stuck with me. So four stars. Why not?
I like that stuff.
Paul?
Three.
I came in wanting to do out of 10 because I think this is a strong 7 that knows it's a strong 7 out of 10.
I like that.
You can go into 0.25. I mean, you could do
anything. Well, if you divide 7.5, that's what you 3.5.
No, it's not the same.
I think
that's what I was going for, by the way. Well, I'm saying 3.75. That's my rating. Ooh,
that's tough.
Well, your rating is higher than Paul's rating?
You just told me that everybody loved it and I didn't.
Right, that's why I'm shocked.
You're thinking is that I'm saying I hate it. I'm just saying these are the things that could have been improved. These are the things I thought as I was watching it. These are my criticisms. As a critic,
I like it. I like this. Is gentle work.
I'm saying there are a lot of eights and nines out there who think they're a 10,
mm-hmm.
but strong sevens like me in this Black Widow movie know we're a 7, and that's kind of sexy.
I mean, Florence Pugh's voice is a 10.
Yes.
Yeah. Florence She's Pugh, so good.
And yeah.
No.
I want to hear her talk forever.
Okay, hold on. So Mike did a 4?
Yep.
Paul did a 3.5. Josh did a 3.75. I'll do 4 as well. So there you go. That's Black Widow.
So we're really not that far apart.
No, we're not.
That's the hilarity of it. That's what makes – that's the special sauce that is iFanboy. You can check out the Pick of the Week show every week where Josh and I talk about the week's comics. We have our special edition shows, our Booksplodes, our Talksplodes, our Media Splodes. And now that the films are back, hopefully – nothing else happens. We don't go back into lockdown. The films are back. We get to talk about more films.
See if any of us die.
Are you doing TV splodes?
TV splodes are too much. It's a bridge too far. There's too much to watch. Too many hours.
All right.
I want to watch 8-10 hours a show to do a 45-minute podcast for.
We talk about the TV shows usually on our Patreon hangout. You can become a patron at patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where we tend to talk about those things. And we'll be back for is Shang-Chi next or is it Eternals? It's Shang-Chi, right?
The Shang-Chi's this year. That's all I remembered from the trailer.
It's Shang-Chi is next.
Yeah, it's in 2 months. So I assume that Eternals wouldn't be coming out next month. Eternals is November. So it's Shang-Chi, and then a couple months later, Eternals. That's going
to
be something.
Do you think it is helpful to have a movie come out this year because it almost technically can't be a flop? Because like,
I think prior to this, they make way more money at the box office without the without the streaming aspect.
Right, I know, but literally, you know, like, who knows how much anything's going to make? Like, it's not how much money it makes right now isn't a good,
right? You can't tell
meter, right? So even if it was, you know, like in another time, if it would have made a ton of money or a little bit of money, it'd be hard to suss right now. So
they can spin it any way they want now, but the reality will the reality be the reality. They won't make more of them if it was a flop.
Right. I'm just still fascinated about when one of these is actually going to flop. Maybe not just commercially, but just like. Wow, no one likes this. Although now in the internet with the social media, I think there's always going to be two groups of people fighting.
Well, no one talks about Hulk. Relative.
Yeah. No one talks about Hulk?
Yeah, Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton.
I think that's old enough that it wasn't like the phenomenon now.
Well, yeah,
Iron Man came before that, and that's like a milestone movie.
Yeah, but Iron Man wasn't a. We have to end this show, but Iron Man
stood on its own.
Made like $300 million, which is a lot of money, but it wasn't like it hadn't blossomed into these billion-dollar juggernauts at that point.
I don't think that happened.
What are we talking about?
I think we're talking about business.
Black Widow and the new Fast and Furious F9. I just want to say it's great that the traditional family quote unquote values are back at the movie theater.
Watching them on your iPad and on your couch.
Yeah. Family.
His iPad is in scaled IMAX.
iFamily.
It's an iPad.
He's got the Dolby Atmos. He streams it out to the Dolby Atmos screen.
It's got spatial audio. No, it doesn't. I don't think this one does.
I'm ending the show. I have the button. And right. I am Connor.
I'm Josh.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Mike.
I'm still Josh. I don't ever do these.
Two different faces, but in tight places, we think and we act as one. Those who seen us know that not a thing can come between us. Many men have tried to split us up, but no one can. Lord help the mister who comes between me and my sister. And Lord help the sister.
By the way, who hearing comes between me and Mike my talk to me on this with my headphones on reminds me of being in my Ford Fiesta talking about the Superman movie.
Oh, because
that's where I recorded it that day.
Oh,
it puts me right there.
Not a
and that was just like
memory.
We recorded that way too soon because we were
too
all like,
soon.
I think I liked it.
Yeah.
I wanted to like it. And I was like, no. We were trying so hard to like
so
it.
Hard.
We wanted to.
I think, was it so me, hard. Mike, and Paul that did the Prometheus review?
I wrote a Prometheus review.
We definitely did. Me and Mike and maybe Paul or Josh did the Star Trek Into Darkness review.
Oh my god.
People got so mad at us for not liking that movie.
What a piece of shit
that was. That was one of the worst months at the movies ever, because it's Man of Steel and then Into Darkness. And I'm sitting in the middle of both of them like, oh my god, I hate this. Yeah. Do I hate this? I hate this.
Am I in the moment hating this?
And then Pacific Rim came out the next month. I was like, yes.
I liked Pacific Rim.
All right.
That's a great movie.
Let's do it.
It saved the summer.
Three, two.
It's the Reign of Fire.
It canceled the apocalypse. That was. I'm sorry.
Everyone stop talking. Three.
Connor, don't have your voice break like last night.
I know. I had a really bad voice break.
Hi, welcome to my fanboy.
It was really hot in here. It was like, I'd really dry.
Okay.
In three, two.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.